to be humble, to be kind. It is a giving of the peace in your mind.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about your experience in the world. And today is May 18th, 2018, if you're listening live this morning with us. And I hope you are, but if you're not, that's okay. You can always get these for up to about 6 months. You can find all the recordings of the live shows over on our radio website in the on-demand section. At least if I'm doing my job, I realize just like a few minutes ago when somebody asked me about a particular recording, I had prepared the recording. I'd finalized it, which is something I need to do before it goes into the archives, but I never uploaded it. And so, you know, there's two steps, guys. You know, you have to actually upload the file. So in any case, I'm going to get that one uploaded this afternoon and hopefully this one as well. But thank you for being here today. And there's a couple of different ways you can actually join us. You can listen as you are, and maybe you're listening on your app or through the Echo or, you know, listening through your computer. But you can also actually chat with us during the show, and you can do that by going over to our private group on Facebook, and you can find that page by going to the radio website, which is 12radio.com. You look on the left side of the page, and there's a link that says chat, and when you click that, you'll automatically be kind of catapulted or redirected over to Facebook, where you can join the people that are already there, including Greg and Renee. Hey, good morning. Thanks for being here. And Terry, thanks for being here. You guys are, you know, the kind of the, what do I call, the stalwart ones, you know, always here on Friday mornings. So thank you for that. And today, my guest is Bruce Rawls. Many of you know him. He is a writer, a web designer. In fact, he's helping me redesign my website, which I just keep going over and over and over, talk about not posting things. That's exactly what I've done with my website. I keep designing and never post. So maybe, hopefully, with his help, I will really follow through on that and get a website up. But in any case, Bruce is here today, and he is an avid course student. And just, you know, I would consider him, I don't want to say a socialite, but the other thing I love about Bruce is how well connected he is. He just really stays in touch with a lot of the course happenings, including helping with some of those websites for the organizations. He just always seems to know a lot of the people that are out and about with the course. So I really appreciate that kind of input. And what we're going to look at today is the Course in Miracles workbook lesson 182, which is, I will be still an instant and go home. So that's what we're going to talk about. So if you're a student of the course and you happen to have that workbook, you might want to open it up. This, you know, there are, I always say there's a handful of lessons, and maybe more than a handful, that are just always my go-to lessons. You know, they just always come back to me, especially in moments when, you know, you just don't know where to turn, or you just, you know, which way is up. This one is incredible. I will be still an instant and go home. And there's a number of reasons that I really like this particular lesson. And one of those is because I think it's one of the, and I think many of them do this, but in it so encapsulates or summarizes so many of the core principles of the course. I mean, if you really read it and you're reading it with an open mind, you know, it's telling us some really core principles, like this world is not our home. And the reason it's not our home is because it's an illusion, it's a dream, and it's our form of forgetting who we are, forgetting and trying to escape from what we think we did, which is that tiny mad idea that we could have separated from God. So this is our playground. I mean, literally, we created this as our playground. Now, a lot of times for me, it doesn't feel like a lot of playground. I mean, it feels like a work ground or a challenge ground. But I think that this lesson really brings that home. Another thing that it brings home, which a lot of students of A Course in Miracles, many people do, this is, I think, a real sticking point, is God did not create the world. Just plain and simple, God did not create this world. regardless of what we think. And I'll tell you, that really does resonate with me. You don't have to believe that if you don't want, but I think this is one of those lessons that just brings it home. Once again, God did not create this world. You did. I also think it really reiterates a lot of what the Course is about, which is getting us to look at our issues, looking at our discomforts, at our annoyances, at everything that just doesn't feel like it adds up. I mean, there's a reason we're not at home in this world. It doesn't add up. It doesn't make logical sense. We oftentimes are just going circles and circles and circles. So this one is telling us, look at your discomfort, but the key is, don't do it by yourself, because by yourself, you just keep making more circles. So this, you know, it encourages us to look at that whole idea of there must be another way. And so if we're willing to first acknowledge that we're not comfortable, acknowledge that, yeah, this isn't working for me, and doing it by myself has never worked, regardless of what I think. And I'll tell you, I feel somewhat like a hypocrite because as an astrologer, I've been talking about Uranus a lot this week, and I'm going to be talking about Uranus because it's the planet that represents our need to be individuals, to have self-expression that's authentic. But you know, Uranus is also about our need to break through the rules, to break through, to shatter belief systems that don't work for us. So I guess I can bring that right back around to A Course in Miracles, because that's what we're doing, is shattering those beliefs that are actually quite limiting. But the limiting part isn't that we need to do everything alone. It's that we need to get back to our right minds. So, you know, once again, that's one of the things a lesson really brings home. And finally, I think the lesson brings home the idea we are decision makers. So in every single moment, in every single instant, we can stop and we can go home. And so I love this lesson. It's one that I come back to over and over and over again. And I also, well, I guess I better welcome Bruce onto the show. Welcome, Bruce. Before I just run away with it.
I was just enthralled with what you were sharing, which was so right on, and it really kind of reiterated and recapitulated the thoughts I was having rereading it and actually listening to Ken's commentary on it again this morning. And it's one of those pivotal, you know, truly essential, quintessential workbook lessons that cover so much ground. So anyway, so thank you for, again, having me on your show. And it's always a pleasure. This is such a great lesson, because it really does encapsulate and distill so much of the wisdom from A Course in Miracles in one lesson, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And if we're willing to really read it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're willing to not, you know, like in Ken's commentary, he does say, you know, this brings out the bliss ninnies in all of us.
Right.
You know, it's going to be okay. Or, you know, I can just pray to God. I can pray to Jesus and he's going to make everything okay. And in this lesson, it's like, no, it's not going to be okay in this world. This world is still an invention. The idea is not to change the invention. The idea is to change your mind.
Right.
So yeah. It's a hard lesson that way too.
It is, but it's challenging us to really look at how many ways we defend what isn't working for us.
Yes.
And I think that's where, you know, well, I mean, we could read some of it, but I mean, the first and second paragraphs kind of just dive right into that, you know. And I'll start with the second paragraph. Right. No one but knows whereof we speak, yet some try to put by their suffering in games they play to occupy their time and keep their sadness from them. Others will deny that they're sad and do not recognize their tears at all. Still others will maintain that what we speak of is illusion, not to be considered more than but a dream. Yet who in simple honesty, without defensiveness and self-deception, would deny he understands the words we speak? So how could this world possibly be enough? How could this possibly be fulfilling on the basis, in the terms of that we made it up, which is basically to find peace in a place where peace is impossible, or to find love where love is impossible? I mean, you know, it's just insanity. But we need to, and I love Ken's commentary where he says, you know, I think to me it's one of the pivotal moments in that audio recording where he talks about lesson 182, is he says the point is not to make us miserable. The point is to have us see how miserable we are, and recognize that we have been that way all along. and get out of that denial, and then use that as the motivation for returning to the place in our mind that we never left, that really does have a consistent and unchanging peace that we can return to. And that really takes, you know, a tremendous amount of honesty, and to go past, you know, what the term that likes to use a lot, which is the, you know, the bliss in the idea of thinking, well, we'll make the world work, you know, it's all going to work out somehow. And
yes,
you know, in the world, you know, and I call that my dream repair technician act, you know. You know, because
yes.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it just won't work, you know. and that's why I think there's so much humor in this course, because it really reminds us that in almost every section of the text in particular, he starts out and says, you know, gives like an expose of how the belief in separation, which, you know, we conveniently shortened to the three-letter word ego, really is, as Ken points out, a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. But we don't see that until, you know, we don't really recognize it until we just look at the thoughts in our minds on an everyday basis, and with increasing vigilance and lucidity and practice, begin to see that anything that comes from that belief in separation does not make us happy. And that's the peace that we long for, that this wonderful lesson alludes to. And it's really a great companion to the Forgotten Song, which is earlier in the text, chapter 21, that it has the same kind of beautiful, nuanced, poetic, rhapsodic almost, call. It's just really us calling to ourselves. It's that part of us, which is really all of us, not a part or a part, that is saying, you know, when are we going to, as this lesson says, put away the childish toys? When are we going to, you know, drop the sword? You know, so I was thinking, you were talking about pets earlier and how, and, you know, we all have our pet projects of trying to make things in the world work for us. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I think when we recognize that trying to attach our identity and our being and our happiness and make those contingent on what happens or doesn't happen in the world is really just a very childish and immature game that we're playing. And we outgrow that eventually. We look at the contents of our mind and say, you know, this isn't working. And we listen to that, you know, metaphorically, that child that is really the ultimate maturity that says, you know, if I really want to be at peace and share that, I need to grow up from the childish, not childlike, but the childish game of thinking that a dream is going to satisfy me or anyone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I always feel like, you know, there are so many different examples in my life that I've seen over and over and over again. And yet I'm somewhat embarrassed to say I obviously don't learn the lesson because I keep doing it. But, well, I mean, here's the example. And you know, when I can stop and laugh at myself, I mm-hmm. have this tendency to want to cook without recipes. And probably because, you know, my mom she's a great cook and a great baker, but, you know, she always used recipes, but for some reason, I don't think I need to, or if I do, I'm kind of lackadaisical when I throw things together. So then when it doesn't turn out quite right, I'm famous for trying to do something after the fact. You know, like, in fact, I think I don't know if it was on this show or another show not too long ago, I had made this chocolate sauce. Well, it didn't taste right. So I kept throwing stuff into it. And of course, it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I finally had to say, CA, the basis of this sauce, you put something in it that you didn't like to start with. It wasn't magically going to become something else. And see, that goes right back to what is the source of something. You know, if the belief is I'm separated, I'm on my own, you know, then what happens is a whole belief system develops. I'm on my own. Things are never going to work out for me. Nobody's ever going to love me. I'm never going to be happy. Whatever it is, there's thousands of manifestations of that one thought that I am separate. I ran away from home. I'm separate. I'm not connected to other people. So we want to say, that all these different things are different, but they're not. They're the same thing. And like I said, as a cook, I just continually do that. And it's like, when am I going to learn that if, you know, it's fine to try a recipe, it's fine to try something, but if you don't like it, you can't fix it after the fact. You've always got to go back to the source. And that's what it is with A Course in Miracles. You know, you can keep massaging it. You can keep, you know, trying to sugarcoat something and make it okay. And it is important, too, that not that we deny what's happening, you know, not that we deny what we're feeling, whether it's happiness or sadness. It's not about denying it. It's about just recognizing what it is and not trying to cover it up. And then, like I said, to me, in fact, as I was reading, you know, I'm just heavy into Ken's book, Journey Home, which is The Obstacles to Peace. And my Catholic school days, I mean, I outline everything, and I find I do that in the book. I'm literally, I have a notebook, and sometimes I'll write some of the stuff out, and I'm literally, you know, looking at, here's a noun, here's a verb, here's a subject, you know, because to me, it really gets it in my head. I know it sounds like a weird thing, but part of the part I was outlining was something Ken said, and he said, you do this without Jesus. You do this without God. You do this without. And as I looked at this whole list, I mean, Ken was making this incredible point that that's what we don't learn, is that in every single moment, all we have to do is just stop and not try to do it by ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because we are always convinced we're going to be able to figure this out. And you know, and that's it. You know, so when I saw that whole list, without, I thought, that's exactly it. Every time we keep going, I can do this by myself, we reinforce the original decision that I am alone and that I am separate. And that is like in the first paragraph of this lesson when he says, it's just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to the mind again. That throb is, I'm not at home. Mm. Home must be someplace else.
Exactly. And it's really even beyond place and time. It's mm-hmm. it's really, if you will, a location in the mind, which isn't even a location, but it's that awareness that we took with us into the dream, isn't it? That says, you know, there's no need to think that we're exiled here. There's no need to ignore those promptings and those persistent feelings, when we can realize that, you know, we just, like you say, start with the right ingredients. And I couldn't help but be amused if I was flashing how, you know, just all it takes is one turd in the punch bowl and then Alexander Marchand's in his wonderful little comic book versions of A Course in Miracles, you know, he talks about turd polishing. And this is kind of the same thing. You know, we basically take something that is not working for us, you know, this this byproduct of, you know, a thought system that is really dysfunctional, and try to make it into something that's not. You know, we you know, another metaphor I like is, you know, it's like we're decorating the dumpster that we find ourselves in instead of crawling mm-hmm. out of the dumpster, you know. But it's really just recognizing that when we're not at peace, we've chosen the wrong teacher and we need help. And if we try to do it ourselves, we're just trying, you know, to make the best of what's really a miserable and hopeless situation without getting the help that we need. And sometimes the help comes in the form of, you know, people saying, hey, you know, you really need to check this out or whatever. And you know, we can put things off long enough to where we make ourselves more and more miserable. But, you know, when we know that there's something that we need to deal with, eventually, you know, it'll get our attention one way or another. The trick is to do it early on instead of waiting until we have our backs against the wall kind of thing.
Right.
But this is really goes beyond those things on the level of form. This is really, you know, as Ken would say, a core ontological longing that suggests that, you know, no matter what we do or don't do in the world, there's something beyond this world that we want. And that's why a lot of these workbook lessons, you know, it lead up to this, suggest that, you know, there is another world that is in the mind that isn't based on separation. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's really the ocean, and the world that we've made up is like a little drop that thinks it's, you know, part of the ocean.
The whole still, thing, right.
That drop is still in the ocean, but we've, in our mind, you know, hypnotized ourselves to believe that there's this barrier between the drop that we think we are and the rest of the ocean. And it's like, no, that's just a misunderstanding, but our minds are so powerful that we can believe all kinds of things, and we can believe that we don't have the help we need, which then, you know, ties into that whole victim martyr thing that really, you know, is sort of the shadow side of our immature, childish, you know, approach to things, where, right, you know, we think that, well, gee, I'm just going to, you know, suffer in silence and all that kind of stuff. And yet, you know, we always do have help, you know, even on the level of form, there's things that, so many things that we can do that help. But really, again, it's this curriculum is not about fixing the dream. It's about going beyond the dream and finding the real piece that's unshakable, that doesn't have, you know, upsets and downturns and you know, reversals that you know, seem to dash our hopes and plans and dreams, you know, when we're least expecting it, or sometimes when we are expecting it.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I keep mentioning this because this is an idea that just keeps coming up for me. And it's the whole idea of the emperor's new clothes.
I love that metaphor. Because, yeah,
but,
yeah,
you know, that's what, I mean, I swear every time I turn around, either somebody's saying that or I'm reading it in a book. It's like, you know, once something comes into your consciousness, then you see it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it fits right in here. And it kind of goes like with whatever you're talking about, polishing the turd or, you know, decorating the dumpster. It's like we just keep saying, you know, we just keep trying to cover it over. Yes, it's wonderful. It's chic. It's this, it's that. And it's like, but he's not wearing any clothes.
We're all naked emperors in that regard. In this,
yeah,
sense that
we're desperate to just keep. Yeah. We're desperate to buy into it or to be okay with it. In fact, I want to read the third paragraph of this lesson because I think it applies here. It says, "We speak today for everyone who walks this world, for he is not at home. He goes uncertainly about in endless search, seeking in darkness what he cannot find, not recognizing what it is he seeks. 1,000 homes he makes, yet none contents his restless mind." I'll tell you, the first time I heard that, I went, oh my God, is that the truth? "He does not understand he builds in vain. The home he seeks cannot be made by him. There is no substitute for heaven. All he ever made was hell." And like I said, I remember the first time I read that and I went, oh my God, if nothing has been truer than that statement for me. You know, mm-hmm. you build and build, you know, 1,000 homes you make, yet none of them satisfy. And I think you cannot deny, as humans, we are just, you know, and, you know, we just have these empty holes, black holes, whatever you want to call it. And it's like, yeah, one more purse, one more pair of shoes, one more home, one more relationship, one more computer, one more this, that, or the other thing is somehow going to be the magic bullet. This is what's going to make me happy. This is what's going to make me content. And it's so incredibly frustrating to me that whenever I then get that thing that I'm just positive is the be all end all, I go, huh. You know, and then I want something else. And I'm so frustrated. Well, I am. I am so totally frustrated by that part of myself. And yet I just have to step back and laugh and go, really? Mm-hmm. Really? Did you think one more thing that you could buy, that you could put on, that you could do to the house, that, you know, that you could relate to a person? Did you really think this was the answer, or that somehow it was going to calm what, you know, he's saying, that throb inside, that persistent feeling is never going to go away by something you create in the illusion to take care of it. No, we're going to be happy. I mean, that's the thing. We're going to be happy. There's going to be those moments, you know, we're going to get that great whatever it is, and boy, we're all set. But for the most part, it fades very, very quickly, because it's always going to be there, the persistent feeling. If we don't recognize that we're not at home, if we don't just kind of own up to that and look for something else, then we're just always searching for it, you know, looking for love in all the wrong places.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and it's just like another new wardrobe for the emperor, and
yeah.
and it's like, well, okay, so you got a whole closet full of stuff that hasn't made you happy. So what? Why would the next one? You know, we have to generalize and realize that, you know, that all the different, and you know, as Ken points out in the commentary on this workbook lesson, he says, you know, the all the homes are metaphors for all the special relationships we have, as you were just talking about, the special relationships to careers and accomplishments and to achievements and you know, bucket lists of every stripe and you know, as well as all the material things, including, you know, keeping a body intact and happy and maximize the pleasure and minimize the pain, and you know, all that stuff that's just an incessant, incredible, endless task to you know, like the I remember it was Ed Sullivan years ago, the act where they have all the sticks on the floor and the plates spinning around, and you know one of them's gonna eventually fall. but we're darned if we don't give it our best shot to keep all those plates, you know, the sticks spinning and the plates going around, and you know, but ultimately we know that that's not going to make us happy, and so why. It's not that we don't go there. It's just, I think if we can just kind of look with amusement at all the things that we do, because, you know, as you know, in the manual, it talks about our changes required in the lives of our, you know, the people who study this curriculum. Well, no, it's not that at all. It's just basically, we just need to change the thoughts that we have. We need to look at the thoughts that aren't working for us and eventually let go of them altogether. But the way we do that is just look at them without condemnation. I think that takes a tremendous amount of practice to just, we don't have to, you know, launch grenades or declare nuclear war on the thought system that is dysfunctional. We just have to recognize that it has had no effect on what we really are, what we truly are in eternity. That perfection, that innocence, which is what this workbook lesson talks about, 182, could never have been lost. And we return to that and are restored to that awareness every time we just look with a little inner smile and say, you know, I like Sisyphus pushing up the rock up the hill. You know, there's nothing wrong with keeping on with all the things on our list. But if we can just kind of watch when we judge those things, or watch when we condemn ourselves for falling short, or when someone else appears to, you know, let us down, or you know, the myriad of ways that we project out our dissatisfaction, you know, with the thought system that we've made up, thinking that it's someone else's fault. You know, just there's so many different ways that we can do that. But if we can just kind of look at all that with, you know, an ocean of salt, shall we say?
Yeah.
then. It doesn't have to have that stranglehold on us. I think we kind of lose that white knuckle grip over time on that dysfunctional belief system when we just look at it without condemnation. Mm-hmm. And that's the being still an instant. That's just saying, wow, was I ever silly again thinking that this next outing or this next project or this next conquest of something, or this next, you know, financial or health regimen achievement, or job or relationship, or you know the whole, every conceivable category of things we think that we need to do in the world or not do in the world, they're all, you know, based on you know, our dream repair technician act being successful, and you know, it's clothing for the emperor again, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, let's read a little bit more of this lesson, because
yes,
I think one of the other things, you know, that it really gets us in touch with, which is a good analogy, at least for me, is, you know, really seeing the child within.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though it's just an analogy, just seeing the child within that wants to go home, that wants to remember the father, that wants to remember what it feels like to be safe and secure. You know, so I'm going to read, I think, let's see, what paragraph is it? 1, 2, 3, 4. I'll start at 4. Uh-huh. Perhaps you think it is your childhood home that you would find again. The childhood of your body and its place of shelter are a memory now so distorted that you merely hold a picture of a past that never happened. Yet there is a child in you who seeks his father's house and knows that he is alien here. The childhood is eternal with an innocence that will endure forever. Where this child shall go is holy ground. It is his holiness that lights up heaven and that brings to earth the pure reflection of the light above, wherein are earth and heaven joined as one. And then he goes on, you know, to talk about this child and this child seeking, you know, literally to go home. And I think as we read that, you know, like there's a line, instance of respite, you know, once again, that's what's so cool about this lesson is, you know, like when you talked about, you know, having those plates on sticks, how often do we feel that way? I mean, you know, it's like, okay, got to do this, got to do this, got to do this, got to do this. And I just want, can I just have 2 minutes? Can I just have 2 minutes to breathe without the plates coming crashing down? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes, you can. But it may not be because you're still not driving the kids to school or whatever. I mean, it you know, but there is a place in your mind. There is a real place you can go to get that kind of respite.
Yeah, it is a chew gum and walk kind of thing, actually, that mm-hmm. you know, with practice, we can actually, you know, chew gum and walk. And I think the same principle applies to the mindfulness that A Course in Miracles suggests, which mm-hmm. is, you know, we can do all the things we need to do, we think we need to do in the world, and actually do them even more effectively mm-hmm. when we're not concerned about the outcome. And then we're free to make better choices, you know, in the world. But that's not the point. The point is that we can watch the contents of our mind with a very loving kindness, gentle appreciation of the fact that our peace of mind, our identity depends not one little tiny bit on what happens or doesn't happen in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And from that perspective, you know, we really can be at peace no matter what's happening.
Right. And, you know, another thing that I want to introduce, and, you know I have this, what I call toolkit. And so people hear these analogies over and over, but it's what works for me.
Uh-huh.
And with this particular lesson, among others, but specifically this one, I always conjure up that scene that came from the movie Sybil with Joanne Woodward and Sally Field. And I know that now, just like he said, you know, all these memories you have, they're so distorted. I don't know what that scene really looked like. I've so built it up in my mind. But the idea is that the therapist, Joanne Woodward, has this big chair in which she wants Sybil to come and sit with her. You know, come and sit with me in the big chair. And that's the idea that despite all these horrible things that had gone on in her life, here's this therapist who's saying, it's okay, in this moment, come and sit with me in the big chair. And, you know, it just like viscerally gives me a reaction when I think of that. You know, I can make it okay. In this moment, let's go home together. And it's interesting, too, because the group Tears for Fears, you remember them and their song Shout?
Uh-huh.
Well, which I would have loved to have played Shout today, because I do, you know, to me that so resonates. Anybody who remembers that song, it's just so repetitive. Shout, shout, get it all out. You know, that so often that is how we feel. The plates are spinning in the air, and no matter what I do, you know, I just want to shout, shout. But I thought, you know, somebody's going to tune into 1-2 Radio and hear that and go, what? This doesn't sound like a very metaphysical, spiritual show to me, but I want you guys to remember that song, Shout, because to me that is the angst that we feel about why does nothing ever work? Why do we always kind of come back to the starting point all over again? But what's interesting is the album I think that Shout is on, I could be wrong about this, but they do have an album that is literally called Songs from the Big Chair.
Huh.
And it's they're talking about the movie Sybil. They're talking about exactly that scene in the movie Sybil. Songs from the Big Chair, because I heard him interviewed one time, and that's what they said. That whole feeling of somebody cares, somebody loves me, somebody's there for me. So despite my angst, despite, you know, all this stuff going on, you know, and I always somehow see it as teenage rebellion, but we're all in that teenage rebellion phase. you know, until, like you said, we grow up. And so when they wrote that whole album and Shout was one of the songs, it was a reflection of being able to come and be safe and, you know, explore and express the angst in our lives. So the next time you hear Tears for Fears, you might think about that.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm sure the album is called Songs from the Big Chair. Or okay, at least how they saw it. But I think they actually named it that, Songs from the Big Chair.
Okay. I just Googled it and I found that on Wikipedia. So.
And is that what it says?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, because, you know, like I said, you know, what was that, the 80s or 90s? My, you know, memory may be distorted. But once again, you read a lesson like this and you go, that's it. I just want that moment. Yeah, I just want that moment of feeling like somebody's there for me. Somebody's got my back. And yet, like in this lesson, it says to us, this child needs your protection. He is far away from home, and he is so little that he seems so easily shut out. His tiny voice so readily obscured. His call for help almost unheard amid the grating sounds and harsh and rasping noises of the world. Yet does he know that in you still abides his sure protection. You will fail him not. He will go home, and you along with him.
Exactly.
You know, that inner child.
Yeah. And it's really that being listened to, and which is, you know, on the level of form, but what it really is sort of metaphor for is when you feel that the big chair feeling, as you're calling it, I think it's really when we are willing to listen to our deepest inner promptings that suggest, you know, there must be a better way. There must be a place of peace that isn't subject to change, that isn't vulnerable and can't be threatened. And I mean, it's almost seems kind of crazy to talk about pure non-duality as being the solution, but that's ultimately what we come to. And that's the maturity of accepting everyone as ourself, through the process of shared interest. Really, we find our way back home to that place we never left by, listening not only to our own inner promptings, but to everyone that we meet, as having the same longing, and recognizing no matter how it's being expressed, that we all want that same peace, and you know, being willing to hear that, you know, essentially, you know, allow our inner kindness teacher to translate what's being shared in any moment by anyone that seems to be outside of ourselves is a call for love or an expression of love when those moments of respite are chosen by the people that are around us. So,
Well, and farther on in this lesson, it says, take time today to lay aside your shield, which profits nothing, and lay down the spear and the sword you raised against an enemy without existence. And, you know, that's another kind of analogy or picture or vision that I think is so useful. Sometimes when I am ready to shout, you know, when I am ready to just scream, all of a sudden I see myself. And I feel like one of those knights from, you know, the Round Table or whatever. I'm covered with all of these defenses, and I've got these big shields, and I've got all this heavy stuff, all this armor. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my God, it's so heavy, I can't take it anymore. And sometimes I just literally see myself like putting my arms down, and it just all falls off, you know. Yeah. Because that, I realize that's exactly what I've done. I've just picked up all of my, you know, all my weapons and all my defenses, and boy, I'm out there, and it's just like there is no enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no enemy out there.
Our empire needs pretty heavy clothing and suits of mail to protect it from the attacks to that empire, doesn't it?
Right, yeah. Right.
And I think the trick is to recognize how subtle, until we start paying attention, those moments are when we picked up our sword or our spear again or our shield and realized, wait a minute. You know, what's this doing in my hand? You know, it's like I don't remember picking this up again. But if we can pay attention to when we start having those moments of defense, and say, "Oh, wow, I'm basically voting against my peace whenever I try to defend my point of view or my identity is separate from someone else or my belief that my interests are different from someone else." All those things really are like picking up a sword or a a spear or you know, something or what. And I think in my imaginary arsenal, I think the blame thrower is one of the newer technology weapons that the ego uses and fires up on a very frequent basis if we're willing to look at it, you know.
Yeah, so. Well, and I love that phrase, voting against yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Voting against my own peace, because, I mean, obviously it has implications in the world, but how often do we do that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we are, I think, clueless as to that's it. We vote against our best interests all the time. And I'm not talking political voting, although that is true, too. But sometimes those very behaviors of choosing, you know, choosing against kindness, mm-hmm. choosing against, you know, of seeing somebody's shared interest, as you said, every time we do that, we're voting against our own peace of mind.
Right. Right.
You know, every single time. And I know it's hard. In fact, that idea kind of came to me. I'm trying to think the other day something happened. And fortunately, I mean, the person, it was almost like instantly I could just see them as like a 2-year-old throwing a fit. And it was like, okay, CA, you have no idea what's really going on for them. So do not confront this. Just let it be. Yeah. You know, and because that's it. Every time we raise that, well, I know I can tell this person off or I can be rude right back to this person. You know, every time we do that, we are voting against our own peace of mind. Yeah. Every single time. I love that phrase. Thank you for offering us that today.
Yeah. And it's really just a decision moment to moment. So, I mean, we, you know, like you say, on the level of form, we may only get to vote politically every couple of years or whatever, you know, thereabouts. But we vote 24/7, 365
yes.
for one of two thought systems. And one of the other workbook lessons I was reading, because I'm doing the calendar version, you know, reminded me that, you know, there seem to be thousands of different choices, you know, millions of different choices, but there's really only one decision that we make moment to moment. And that's which of two thought systems we want to listen to and apply in our mind. And it's really that simple. It really is that beautifully, innocently simple. I think one of the things I really like about this lesson is it, to me, highlights the difference between childish and childlike, which I think we
yes.
touched on earlier. Because the childlike quality that's eternal, that is our real self, really is infinitely mature, because it's really ageless and timeless. But it's that innocence that we've never lost, that we, you know, that as Ken points out in his commentary in this lesson, it says, you know, the only thing we can cry for, you know, is our seemingly lost innocence, you know, and that's never been lost. We couldn't possibly lose that innocence, because we never left it except in a dream. And when we think that, you know, we've left it, then that's when we need to back up and say, oh, I'm acting childish by the arrogance of thinking that I can do something on my own. And that's something that we did on our own, is make up a whole universe, and we call it space-time and form and matter and bodies and galaxies and quarks and quasars and everything in between. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So should I read another paragraph
sure.
here?
Sure.
Okay. This is another just kind of real practical thing that, you know, just moment to moment, just make the decision. He says, rest with him frequently today, for he was willing to become a little child that you might learn of him. How strong is he who comes without defenses, offering only love's messages to those who think he is their enemy. He holds the might of heaven in his hand and calls them friend, and gives his strength to them that they may see he would be friend to them. He asks that they protect him, for his home is far away, and he will not return to it alone. So the request is really being made again of our decision-making mind, isn't it? That moment to moment, we are being asked to vote for the thought system that is all-inclusive, that recognizes that anything that isn't is a dream that's ephemeral, fleeting, and temporary, and not worthy of our identification and our concern. And also the forgiveness to when we do seem to be worried and upset about what's happening in circumstances that come and go, to just be gentle with ourselves and say, oh, I must have been afraid of the love that this innocence really represents. Again, And that's okay. You know, it hasn't changed anything. You know, we've just taken a little, you know, another scenic detour, but we'll eventually get to where we're going because we never left. It's a journey mm-hmm. without distance to a place we never left, right?
Right. Well, and yeah. And, you know, something you said kind of triggered me on this one, because I think this is a continuing belief too, is that it's really easy to build up this huge, you know, concrete wall of what I call the ego and think that I have to do battle against it. This intransient, you know, ego. And yet, once again, it's sort of like fighting the darkness. Mm-hmm. Darkness, in a sense, doesn't even exist. And what I mean by that right. is if I walk into a room and flip the light switch, I don't have to fight the darkness. I mean, it's like darkness is nothing. I mean, and the ego, I'm not saying that it's not very, very real to us. I would be silly to sit here and go, oh, that's so easy. But also the ego is, as you said, it's a belief system. That's all it is. And every time we choose to believe something else, we weaken that particular belief system. So I think sometimes, too, it's important not to build up, just like not building up all these outside enemies, not building up this ego into this, I've got to do battle against the ego. Because in essence, every single time you simply choose to see something else, you choose to believe something else, you choose to believe in the possibility of non-separation, the possibility that we do have shared interests, then the ego loses its strength in the same way that you turned on a little nightlight.
Yeah. I love that light metaphor. In fact, I was just picturing in several places we've lived, I've replaced the default light switches with the ones that have a little neon bulb or something that glows so that you can find it in the dark.
Right.
I think our inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit, is kind of like those little light illuminated switches that say, psst, psst, hey, over here, you know. Instead of saying, okay, I'm going into that darkened room now with my suit of mail and my armaments and my cat of nine tails and you know, all the, you know, the horrific weapons of battle and defense that I can muster. No, you don't need to do it. Just go into the room and flick the light switch on, you know, that's a great metaphor that fighting.
Well, and I remember years ago, I mean, I used to be a pretty staunch Christian. You know me, when I do something, I do it all the way. But I remember one of the, you know, here's, you know, the cracks or the faults you kind of can't get to. And of course, eventually I become an astrologer and realize how true this is. And that is, there is no planet that creates darkness.
Uh-huh.
There is only the sun. And you are either facing the sun or you're not facing the sun. But there is no equivalent. I mean, so I guess what I'm saying is I don't think there is an equal equivalent to God that would be considered evil or the devil. That's what I always struggled with when I was a Christian. It's like, how could the devil be the equal to God? And astrologically, you know, like I said, I keep thinking about that. The sun is the source of, at least for us, astronomy-wise, it is the source of all energy and power. In our cosmos. But there isn't an equivalent planet that comes along and says, okay, I create darkness. Mm-hmm. It's always everything is in relationship to the sun. The yep. moon's phases are all in relationship to the sun. You know, yep. So many of the astrological aspects, you know, the eclipses, etc., they're all about a combination of the moon or the earth or our visual of where we are in relationship to the sun. Mm-hmm. And to me, I just think so it doesn't take too much jumping to go, guys, you know, the ego, darkness. I'm not saying that, you know, that we don't have the effects of those belief systems. That's the other thing. And of course, it literally says your beliefs are not neutral.
Right, right.
They are not neutral. So don't believe that something that, you know, can't hurt you that way in the body. But on the other hand, that's it. They are beliefs and they are strengthened by our thoughts. But when we really get down to it, is there anything equal to the sun? Is there anything that can create darkness? Or is it a matter of our turning away from the source?
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, I would kind of leave you with that today. I realize, you know, we've got a few minutes to wrap up, but
yeah. I think that eclipse metaphor is a great one to kind of allude ties into the Plato's allegory of the cave and how we live in a world of shadow that you know, you can hold your thumb up and you know, seem to blot out the sun, but that's just for your quote benefit unquote. Should we finish with the last
perception paragraph? Yes, let's do that.
Okay. How about if I read
it? Yeah, go ahead and read it.
Okay. You have not lost your innocence. It is for this you yearn. This is your heart's desire. This is the voice you hear, and this the call which cannot be denied. The Holy Child remains with you. His home is yours. Today he gives you his defenselessness, and you accept it in exchange for all the toys of battle you have made. And now the way is open. And the journey has an end in sight at last. Be still an instant and go home with him and be at peace a while.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a great lesson. We may have to do this for 2 or 3 weeks.
It certainly bears repeating. I've listened to that audio of Ken's about this lesson dozens of times, and I get a little more each time I listen to it. So it's yeah.
Okay. Well, and reminding me of that, I think I will use that on next week's show, because we've alluded to it a couple of times. And
yeah,
so people tune in next week and I will play that audio by Ken talking about this lesson. So if you really enjoyed this lesson and you go, yeah, I just want to go home. I just want to go home for an instant just to see what it feels like, just to see what it is, then please tune in next week and we'll listen to that. So Bruce, do you have any announcements you'd like to make before we wrap up the show today?
I guess one thing is that the Miracle Share virtual conference is happening again this October. We're still working on the details. I'm helping out with that again this year. It'll be the 19th, 20th, and 21st. I think that's the weekend in October. We'll have details on the website and a lot of wonderful sharings about the course. And you can always reach me through acimblog.com. And I always encourage people to visit the two main websites for A Course in Miracles, which is acim.org and facim.org.
Okay. And I just posted your acimblog.com in the Facebook page. So if somebody wants to go to that, they can. And, of course, please do go to those other sites as well, the FACIM. And what is the other one?
ACIM.org.
Okay, that's pretty easy. One has an F in front of it, which is the foundation, which is the teaching arm, and the other one is the main foundation that publishes the course.
Exactly. Thank you,
Sia. Right. And by the way, what you were just talking about, the Miracle Share, is that online or is that an actual conference?
It's an online course. It's a virtual conference, right? Not a course, but a conference.
Okay, virtual conference. Okay.
And it basically has happened three previous times. I've participated all three of those times. And it's just a lot of fun where you get, a bunch of people that are aficionados of the course sharing their insights and inspirations. And there's recorded videos that are half an hour each, and then a half hour of live call-in commentary and questions Q&A. And it's just a lot of fun. I've enjoyed everything that everyone has shared for all three of those immensely. And it's because it's virtual, you don't have to be there if that weekend is booked for you. You can watch and listen correspondingly to all the presentations after the fact.
Okay.
And it's just great fun. Highly recommend. You know, no travel expense, no airfare, no hotels and all that stuff. So it's kind of fun.
Makes it easy. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, CA. It's always a pleasure, and I always appreciate the opportunity to share.
And I look forward to talking to you again soon and working on that website.
Yes.
We are making some progress, right?
We are, indeed. Yeah.
Okay. And I want to thank everybody who listened today and everybody in the chat room, and especially to Greg. He posted something. I think that's a picture from a Monty Python movie, because, in fact, they used it in the play Spam-a-Lot, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Where, the Black Knight has lost his arm and he goes, I've had worse.
Yeah, exactly. There's the bliss in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not very funny, but if you know Monty Python Spam-a-Lot, version of it too, it is pretty funny. Just, the way we do it, right?
Yep.
So everybody, thanks for being here today. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And I hope you will stay tuned, because we've got a lot of live programming coming up next on Fridays. Hope you have a good weekend, and please come back next week where we will be listening to what Ken has to say about this lesson. So everybody, thanks a lot. And I just hope you have a great week. And you have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are exploring A Course in Miracles and hopefully changing the way you think about life and spirituality.
To give in such a way that has no end, we are love.